Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're on what I think is a pretty critical mission, mapping the evolution of AI. We're looking at this amazing body of work from Vagn Tursian and his colleagues, which really pushes AI away from just being a static data tool towards something, you know, way more complex, resilient, and, well, human aware.
It's an evolution that had to happen. I mean, for years, AI was great in a lab, in a controlled setting. But the second you put it out into the messy real world, our world, it struggled.
Right. A world full of nuance and context. And let's be honest, people trying to trick it.
Exactly. Adversarial threats. So today, our deep dive is really about finding those aha moments. We're looking at how we get from A to B, from a brittle system to an adaptable one.
So our mission for you listening is to track this journey from, let's say, a smart calculator to a genuinely sophisticated intelligence. We're going to hit the big three challenges the sources lay out: handling context, complexity, and threats.
And we'll be looking at some key innovations they developed to solve this, things like semantic metanetworks, digital cloning, and this really cool concept of digital immunity.
Okay, so let's start at the foundation, the big problem, right? Knowledge isn't universal.
No, not at all. A statement like X causes Y is almost never true everywhere, all the time. It depends entirely on the context. And traditional AI systems, with their fixed rules, just fall apart when that context changes.
Okay, so if traditional AI knowledge is like a single flat paper map, this new system, the semantic metanetwork, it's more like a stack of those transparent overlays you'd use in school.
That's a great way to think about it. It's a multi-level structure. So at the bottom, level zero, you have your basic knowledge, just, you know, a simple network of objects and relations.
So on level zero, you might have a simple fact like sunlight helps plants grow.
Exactly. But then level one immediately comes in and adds the context. It says, hold on, that relationship only really exists within the context of, say, photosynthesis.
Or it might change completely in the context of desert versus a rainforest.
Precisely. And the crucial step is that level one treats those contexts, photosynthesis, desert, not just as tags, but as actual objects themselves with their own properties.
Which gives it nuance. And the sources say this goes even higher, right?
It does. Level two and up, you get metacontexts. This is where you start defining the relationships between the contexts. So how does the desert context relate to the drought context? This nested structure is what gives the AI its incredible depth.
Okay, so you've built this complex, layered brain. What can it actually do with it? The sources mentioned four key reasoning tasks.
Right, because it has to be able to use this information. The first is contextualization, basically using the layers to find the specific original meaning of something.
And the second is the opposite of that.
Yep, decontextualization, where you strip away all those specific layers to get to a more generalized, universal meaning.
And the other two sound like they're all about learning and adapting.
They really are. You have context recognition, which lets the AI figure out an unknown context just by seeing how information changes as it passes through. And then there's lifting. This is the really powerful one.
That's where it can take knowledge from one context and apply it to a totally new one.
Exactly. It's true adaptation without having to relearn everything from scratch.
And we see this applied in things like the meta petri nets. I was really struck by that military logistics example, Admiral. It's like two systems talking to each other.
That's the key. You have the basic level, which is modeling the actual process-like moving supplies. But then you have the meta-level net on top acting as a structure controller.
So it's not just managing the flow. It's actually changing the rules of the game on the fly.
Right. It decides which processes should be active based on the mission context, almost like flipping switches on and off in the basic net below it. It's dynamic control for a world that changes by the minute.
And that same idea applies to predictive models too, like the Bayesian metanetwork.
Yeah, it's the same principle. In a normal Bayesian network, the probabilities connecting events are fixed. Here, in the metanetwork, those probabilities themselves become variables that were controlled by the upper contextual level.
So the context literally determines how likely a prediction is.
Which is a huge leap.
Okay, that's a perfect foundation. We have a contextual brain. Now, how does it learn dynamically? Because we all know the old way. Just picking the best algorithm and letting it run is really brittle.
It is. And the researchers have a great name for it. The best player fallacy.
I like that. It's like building a sports team.
Exactly. You can pick the best forward, the best defender, the best goalie. But if they can't play together as a team, you're going to lose. Static selection of the best individual AI components just doesn't work in the real world.
So the answer isn't a fixed lineup. It's what they call dynamic team selection.
Precisely. The virtual classifier model. For every single new task like say, a new customer needing a recommendation, the system dynamically assembles the best team of components for that one specific instance.
And that flexibility brings us to two really interesting learning methods. Let's start with ignorance learning. Learning from nothing, from the voids in the data.
It completely flips the script on how AI thinks about data. Traditional AI lives in a closed world. If it's not in the data set, it doesn't exist, which, you know, leads to massive overfitting.
It gets really confident about the tiny little world it knows.
Right. But ignorance-aware AI adopts an open world view. It actively looks for the voids and labels them ignorance zones.
So how does knowing what it doesn't know actually help it learn?
It uses curiosity. Instead of just wanting more and more random data, the system strategically picks the single most informative data point it can find that's right next to the biggest void, the biggest ignorance zone.
That's targeted learning.
Super targeted. And the results are incredible. The sources showed it could use just 23.6% of a data set, but achieve almost the same accuracy as a system that used the whole thing. The efficiency is just phenomenal.
That efficiency has to help with defense, too. Which brings us to hyperflexible CNNs. So standard convolutional neural networks are rigid. Their math is fixed. Why is that so bad?
It's a huge vulnerability. An operation like max pooling can only do max pooling. It's brittle. So an attacker can create tiny, almost invisible changes to the input data in an adversarial attack, and the whole network just collapses because it can't adapt its own internal math.
So the big idea here is to make the math trainable.
Yeah.
Using these generalized mean functions, the GLM and GPM.
Exactly. Instead of the operation being hard-coded as maximum, it has trainable parameters. The pooling layer literally learns to behave as MIN or average or max or anything in between based on what the specific data needs.
It's making the network internally adaptable.
And the results were just staggering. Up to a 275% better accuracy against serious attacks compared to a standard model. That's not a small improvement. That's a game changer.
It really is. It shows that true strength comes from flexibility, not just brute force.
Mm.
Which is a perfect segue to the human element. If AI is this flexible, how do we keep human values and, you know, human intelligence in the loop? And this is where we get to the idea of digital cognitive cloning.
Yeah, and this tackles the biggest bottleneck in what we call Industry 4.0. You can automate a factory, but you can't automate the nuanced final decision of the expert engineer. That's slow, and it doesn't scale.
So the PIMind agent is designed to be a digital copy. But what is it actually copying? It's more than just facts, right?
It's cloning their unique style, their experience. It fuses the rational AI with the person's specific value system, their gut feelings, their appetite for risk, how they balance creativity and efficiency. The goal is a decision that feels like it was made by an experienced human.
And how did that work in the real world?
It worked incredibly well. The PIMind agents hit 91% decision accuracy compared to the actual human experts they were cloned from.
So you have a scalable human representative that can make value-based decisions at machine speed.
Yes. And that is the core idea behind the shift from Industry 4.0 to Industry 5.0.
Okay, break that down for us. What's the big difference?
Industry 4.0 was all about the tech. Automation, efficiency, speed. But then global crises hit, pandemics, climate change, and we realized that wasn't enough. Industry 5.0 is the response. It's about human-centric resilience, well-being, sustainability.
And the digital clones are the bridge, letting us keep the speed, but with human values in charge.
That's the idea.
Okay, if we're cloning human style, we have to talk about intuition, a gut feeling. The sources even bring emotions into AI with emotional neural networks, or ENNs.
Right, because traditional AI can be very, very confident while being completely wrong. It has no self-doubt, no introspection.
It lacks that little voice that says, this feels weird.
Exactly. The ENN creates that voice. It's a neuron with a dual output system. You have the rational stream, which makes a normal prediction, but you also have an emotional stream, which calculates an anxiety function.
So what's this anxiety actually measuring?
It's measuring the distance between what the AI believes and what it expected to see. So the rational part might say there's a 95% chance of success. But if the data feeding that prediction is totally new or weird, the emotional part sounds an alarm high anxiety, even with the high probability.
So it flags decisions that look good on paper, but just feel wrong because the situation is too strange.
It's digital intuition, a way for the system to question its own confidence. It's a critical safety feature.
So we've made the AI contextual, flexible, intuitive.
Yeah.
Now we have to protect it, because all this complexity opens it up to what the sources call cognitive hacking, data poisoning.
And this is terrifying. Attackers aren't just trying to get through a firewall anymore. They're trying to manipulate the AI's mind. They'll inject bad data or remove good data to subtly shift the AI's decision boundary until it confidently makes the wrong choice, all while thinking it's performing perfectly.
So we need more than just security. We need digital immunity. Cognitive vaccination. What's the difference between that and just, you know, normal system maintenance?
Normal security is mostly reactive. Adversarial pre-training is proactive. It's like a vaccine. You intentionally expose the system to simulated worst-case attacks before you deploy it.
You're training it to fight back.
You're training it to withstand, detect, and recover to achieve what they call the R3 standard: reliability, robustness, and resilience.
That makes a lot of sense. And on the privacy side, they also talk about homeomorphic encryption.
Yeah, this is so clever. The problem is you can't train an AI on encrypted data because the encryption scrambles the math. But homeomorphic encryption encrypts the data while preserving its underlying numerical shape.
What does that mean, preserving the shape?
Okay, think of it like this. You want to bake a cake, but the recipe is secret. Homeomorphic encryption lets you wrap each ingredient in a special locked box. You can still mix them, put them in the oven, do all the math, but you never actually see the secret ingredients inside. The process works, but the data stays private.
That is an incredibly elegant solution. And finally, they actually apply this whole idea of resilience training to people with the WARN project.
Yeah, this project was about building cognitive resilience in students against things like misinformation. And they use this amazing technique, AI-powered intellectual sparring.
So they had students debate against an AI.
Not just any AI. They used LLMs that were designed to act like competing JANs generative adversarial networks. So the student is debating an intelligent opponent that is constantly adapting and challenging their arguments in real time.
Wow. So you're not just practicing against a static argument. You're building up your mental muscles.
That's it, exactly. And the results were stunning. They documented a 12.68x increase in the students' argumentation skills. A huge leap in human resilience.
That really brings this whole thing full circle. We went from static data to contextual knowledge. We designed for hyper-flexible learning. We cloned human values into the system. And then we trained both the AI and the human to be resilient.
The whole arc of Terzian's work seems to be that the future of AI isn't just about raw computing power. It's about collaborative intelligence. It's about adaptation, resilience, and wisdom, really.
Creating systems that aren't just smart, but are safe enough to actually help us in the real world.
Which leaves us with a final and pretty profound thought for you to take away. We've talked about encoding human values into these systems, but what happens when they start learning and evolving on their own? How do we make sure those ethics don't get lost over generations of AI?
That's a big question.
It is. And the sources propose a genetic responsibility model. The idea is to encode ethics like DNA with an immutable gene for core, non-negotiable safeguards and mutable genes for rules that can adapt. So the question for you is this: can we really trust an inherited genetic style code to prevent responsibility from decaying as these systems become truly autonomous?
Something to chew on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.